So I want to welcome our guest, LaShawn Merritt, and also have another guest, our guest co-host today, Coach Justin Byron, associate head coach at Cornell. Welcome, and welcome, LaShawn. We know Coach Byron and I know LaShawn from back in the day when we all used to train in Virginia together. All the hard days. You know, Coach Byron and I are washed up and retired, but LaShawn, you know, he's still at it, you know, picking up medals and whatnot.
So LaShawn made me feel like
welcome.
He made me feel like I was washed up and retired back when we was training together.
Exactly.
I felt washed up and retired back then.
No, we'll go into the humbling experience that is training with LaShawn Merritt. But let me just get into his stats real quick. Really quickly, LaShawn Merritt, PR in the 400, 43.65. PR in the 200, 19.74. In the 300, 31.23. And I believe you have the title. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're the most decorated. Help me out.
The most decorated male American.
There we go. And how many medals is that?
You know what, man? I really don't even know.
You don't know. Come on. And these are medals. We're talking World Championship and Olympics, right?
Championship Olympics.
So you have so many medals that you don't remember how many, but
it's like 11, 13. I think it's like 11 or between 11 and 13, I think, something like that.
No, these man, are gold, these are medals, like gold medals. So
this is my career. This is my 15th year professional.
Wow. And not just a long career, but you know, you've been winning. You know, you have a lot of hardware. You have the accomplishments to show. And so we want to chat a little bit about that, you know, how you got started, a little bit about your journey. And what you're doing right now, what's going on, what life is like right now, what you've been up to.
Okay.
That's the first thing is, you know, how'd you get started with track and field? I remember when we used to train with you, we used to make fun of you because I remember you used to be in a band or something, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Where I went to high school, the band was, it's funny, sports, you know, I always talk to Coach Byron about this, JB, about how sports, you know, can make you, like, you'll be cool and popular and, you know, you're not going to get bullied and whatnot when you're good at sports. Because I'm a computer nerd. You know, you're in the band. It's like, you know,
I played the piano growing up, you know what I'm saying?
But exactly.
I can hoop and I can sprint, though. So, you know what I mean?
So all of those kind of stereotypes that, you know, you would get picked on growing up in school, when you're good at sports, you know, and, you know, parents should pay attention to this, sports are like the great equalizer. When you're good at sports, everyone shows you respect, you know? So you could be in the band or be yourself and do whatever you want. And people always have respect as you being like the fastest person in the school or whatever. So how'd you get started?
Man, when I was young, I was always the fastest, always racing. didn't know that track and field was a thing, you know? So it wasn't like people were actually on track teams, youth track teams when I was younger, or even that track was a popular sport around here. But I was always fast. So I grew up playing baseball. So in baseball, I was always stealing bases, and then I started playing football where the speed showed there. Still didn't know about track. This track still wasn't a thing. So I did baseball, football, a little bit of basketball, recreational basketball, played for the church, not really for the school. But then in high school, I just went out for the track team. It wasn't a thing growing up. I don't even think I watched the 2000 Olympics. I didn't, or 2000, I mean, it wasn't a thing. Olympics really just wasn't a thing. Then my sophomore year, I started running the 400. Football coach was the track coach. He came to me at a meet. Everybody was running sprints. My 10th grade year, and he says, we need somebody to run the 400. And it was track guys and football guys up there. So obviously, he kind of tapped into the football testosterone and just, well, yeah, real men run the 400. Y'all scared. And I was like, man, I'll run it, man. And won by a large margin and kept running it. And kept winning, but I wasn't training for it. That was the thing. It was like I was winning and I wasn't training.
Yeah.
And then I'm from Portsmouth. So right here in Norfolk, I met the coach who coached the three of us when you all was there. Yep.
Dwayne. Shout out to Dwayne Miller.
Dwayne.
Young Wayne.
So I met him and started doing summer track.
Mm-hmm.
So summer track, obviously, you get more developmental skills as you travel more. My school track team, it was just maybe three or four of us. It wasn't really a team. School spirit wasn't there. Track wasn't a thing. But an asphalt track, I used to train around the school. It just, school spirit for track, it just wasn't a thing. So when I got into the club part of it, it introduced me into what track and field was really about. Then I got into traveling. I started really training. I would train at school, then get out of school, and then go train with Dwayne in high school. So I trained twice a day. Then we would train at night. And I started taking it serious. He started taking it serious. And my junior year, I went to an Olympic development camp out in San Diego. They had the top sprinters, top 60, top 400 meter runners in the U.S. And I was invited. Brooks Johnson was like the head, I wouldn't say director, but I remember him the most from there. He lectured a lot. He did a lot. Who eventually ended up being my coach for a long time and won some medals with him too. But back then, I remember like it was yesterday. It was the top 60-meter sprinters, 55, 60-meter sprinters, hurdlers, and 400-meter guys. And it taught us a lot about recovery. It was Olympic development. And the last day, we had a 60. And these blocks had the pressure blocks. It was like the pressure on it. So it gauged how much you shot out, whatever, or how much pressure you put into the blocks. And we had a bet that whoever had the fastest 60 was, I think it was maybe just $1, $2, everybody bet. And I remember I ran the fastest 60, but I had the least amount of pressure out of everybody on the block.
Yeah.
It was like, some you got, you might not know what you're doing, but you're doing something.
So exactly.
And I developed it, man. In my senior year, I didn't lose. I won everything. Yeah, I went from 47.9 to 45.2 in the year, and I ended up winning World Juniors the first time I traveled out of the country. My senior
year. Where was that?
That was Grosseto, Italy. That was 2004. I won the four. I anchored the 4x4, and I anchored the 4x1.
That's right. I heard about that one.
Crazy. Yeah. And the story after that, man, it was just after that happened, after my senior year, I obviously could go to any school I wanted to. Didn't want to go far from home. Got to East Carolina. Ran a track meet indoor my freshman year at Tyson Invitation in Arkansas. I was the only freshman. That whole field was elite. I won. Couple weeks later, Nike called me and said,
Whoa, you got to back it up. You got to back it up.
We're going to go back,
but that was your first collegiate meet?
No. I was the only collegiate in the field.
Okay.
So he already skipped forward to ECU.
I got you. Yeah. You tried to, you smooth ran over that time, though. What time did you run at that race? What time did you run?
Yeah, like 44.9, I think. I remember that. It was crazy.
44.9 before, after that, people started running times. But I ran that. Nike called me a couple weeks later, turned pro right before, a couple of weeks before NCAA. But that time, when I think about that time, I think about it's just perception of time, like what people feel fast is.
I
thought it was fast, but after that, they started running 44 indoor.
So
it's crazy, man. But that's how I kind of, before it gets to the elite part of things, that's how I pretty much got started, man. I was always fast in other sports.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know about track to high school, started it. People kind of saw something in me, and I eventually, before I graduated, got with a coach that kind of was interested in developmental. And we took it from there.
So you grew up in Portsmouth, Virginia.
The junior, yeah.
And so at the time, track wasn't a big thing in Portsmouth.
Nah, it wasn't, man. It wasn't.
So nobody.
It was, you know what? When I was young, I didn't. It may have been, but I.
No, you wasn't exposed to it. You wasn't exposed to it.
Well, I want to, you know, a lot of folks may not know Portsmouth, you know. I don't want to talk trash about Portsmouth. So I don't know how it was with you growing up. I'm going to say in the section of town that I lived in, it was pretty we lived in the hood, Coach Byron and myself, because I still consider Portsmouth where we live.
Yeah.
Brookwood Court.
It's an area. Cool.
So a lot of folks who are listening, they may not have grown up in that type of situation, you know, growing up in the hood and understanding that, you know, all the, they don't, not all these opportunities are present in all neighborhoods. You know, a lot of kids may never in Portsmouth have seen a track person, gain a reputation, an accomplishment from track. Like you might be the first that they see have gone to this next level. And so I'm sure now more people are running track because you served as inspiration for others. And so, you know, I think it's important to just talk about that because, like I said, a lot of folks don't understand what it's like to grow up in certain situations. They can't relate to it because it's not theirs. And they don't understand how important of an opportunity a sport like track and field can provide.
Yeah, man, it's big. I never paid attention a lot in history growing up because I never thought I would travel.
Yeah, that's the perfect point.
Yeah, so, and I'm almost done with my second passport.
Yeah, how many countries have you been to?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I always tell people I've been to 30 plus, and you know, I can imagine you're triple that, you know?
The sport, man.
It's Byron too. How many countries, you know?
It's a thing where it opens your eyes. It's because it's such a world. Or we run abroad so much, you get exposed to so much. It keeps you. You have this optimistic mind. It's a lot with it, and it's a sport where you have to take accountability. It teaches you a lot about life and character, and it's an individual sport. So it's a lot of life building within the sport of track and field. I feel win or lose, if you're good or you're not. The training itself requires a certain amount of discipline and character. I think it's a good sport. But right here in Portsmouth, it was rough. It was rough, man. Now I'm going to tell you what I did get exposed to, which is a blessing that I think about today. When I was in the third, fourth, fifth grade, my football coach and my baseball coach was my third grade teacher's husband. I should say my third grade teacher husband was my mentor growing up. My mom was always a baseball mom or the sports mom. She whatever the case, she's staying back and she bringing cookies, she bringing this. So it was a couple moms like that. And those kids would go to maybe five of us. Would every now and then go to Virginia Beach to Bruce Smith House, third, fourth, fifth grade. So Bruce Smith graduated from Booker T, Hall of Famer. Booker T's in Norfolk. And Booker T married his niece, or their niece, or something like that. So they had this connection. We'd go out there. So I would literally go from the hood where there was no grass and I could never keep shoes clean. To these mansions in Church Point, I think it was called Church Point, where you had Teddy Riley, Missy Elliott, B.P. Whitaker, Bruce Smith, all of them lived out there. I didn't think about it then, but when I think about it now, having had exposure to a different life, I mean, we would only go out there and have a cookout or whatever, but it was different. But I think about it now, when I think about it as I gotten older, it kind of did something to me when I was back then. It kind of let me know that it's more to something. And this guy is from Norfolk. Even though he's one in a million, it's still possible that it's more out there. So keeps me dry. That's kept me going a lot in my life.
And you said something I want to point on real quick, because I want to gloss over it, because it's a point that I've noticed a common trend. And you said your mom was a sports mom, you know, and you had a mentor. Mm-hmm. Two important things, you know, I think when we talk when Black, you know, youth, when we're talking about, you know, coming up and, you know, having a mentor is an important thing. You know, somebody who is just really teaching you what life is going to be like, you know, that it's not, you know, it's not necessarily just, you know, telling you everything's perfect. It's you know, keeping things real with you and helping to guide you. You know, we make mistakes and all those different things and giving you some perspective from their experience. So having a mentor is important, but also the fact that your mom made sure you went to practice and, you know, you had a sports mom who was into it. And I always often say the same about my mom. I never missed track practice. And, you know, I interviewed Lashinda, and it's the same thing with her mom. You know, when she's ready to give up, she's like, you know, her mom was out there like, nah, you know, run up those hills, you know. There's a common thread here. There's a common thread that all these people who have been successful, you know, there are certain things that were in place. They didn't have to be rich in it. It was just certain things, you know, they were able to have somebody who was supporting them, who was pushing them, behind them. It's usually a parent who's really on top of them and helping them to, you know, have these experiences. Yeah. And it was some sort of mentor or someone that they looked up to that provided, you know, guidance as well. So just important things I want to just kind of highlight, you know.
Nah, for sure. You own it. You own it, man. That's what it's about. And when I talk to kids now, it's those things that you just touched on is what I talk about. Like, hey, I'm here. I was where you were, and I'm here.
Exactly.
I'm telling you some things. One, so you can say, you can't say no one's ever told you. So when I talk to kids and I'm around here, especially, I'm giving them game like I give my nieces as if they were my nieces or my nephews or my little cousins, just letting them know, hey, it's competitive. I'm from around here and I made it to this. I'm no different. But it's some things that I did, small things that kind of kept me on a path. And having this inner voice, having control of my inner voice and telling myself certain things and knowing everything is about choices, but learning early, having a mentor and a foundation early that kept me on a path of making right choices, of making not necessarily right choices, but choices that kind of gear me a certain way. And you know, man, I've just been blessed to have that. And when you talk about support, my support system, man, has been A1. My parents have been A1.
There we go.
Parents, community, family, friends.
Yes.
And they've wanted to see me succeed. You know what I mean? So that's been a big part. Man, I grew up with talent. I've seen a lot of people with amazing talent just have the wrong circle. And even parents, man. And when I talk to kids, I even talk to the parents. If it's a room full of kids and the parents, I tell the parents, hey, I talk to these kids and let these kids know they need to do X, Y, Z, but I can't tell them that you're doing the total opposite at home.
Sure.
Like, I need to highlight y'all too. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, circle is tough. You know, circle is tough, especially when the negative influences in your circle are in family members. That's a tough one. I know a lot of us, for, you know, me coming from St. Croix, you know, JB, DC, and you, Portsmouth, you know, a lot of us have friends, you know, that, like, you have to in some way separate from because they're, you know, their choices lead them in an entirely different direction.
Yeah, man.
And so that's a big piece of it too, who you're associating with. So that was a good point.
And so
I was wondering about, you know, coming up in Portsmouth. Right now you're back in Virginia right now, right?
Man,
I don't want to get too far forward because there are different pieces that I want to hit in this.
Go ahead.
You were coming up. You always were winning, right? So your story is a little different because you were winning, you were good.
Wasn't even trying. One trying with track. My boy was playing track.
Exactly. I want to know when it got hard. When, because I knew where you were always winning, and then you dropped that time in college, and then you left ECU and you went pro. And it wasn't like, you know, you're pro, and it's like, all right, I'm the top guy now. You know, you have coming out that time. I think you had Kakaia. Garrett Kakaia was around. You know, Angelo was still doing his thing. You had Jeremy Warner, right? So when did it start getting a little tough?
Hey, look, I want to add this too. If you're saying, because I want to know the time frame of when it got tough versus when you said, yo, I can do this, right? Like, because if you was playing track, right, you baseball, you trombone, football, right? Like, doing all of that, and you just playing with track, but you're good at it. So I want to know, also in relation to when it got difficult, I want to know when you was like, yo, this is going to be my thing. Like, this is going to be what I do. And did that come before it got difficult or while it got difficult? Like, I want you to tie that in as well.
Okay, so I feel like after I turned pro, it was a big decision because I knew it was serious now. It was like, okay, I had this hype. Now I'm thrown into somewhere where I'm not, some people gonna hype me, but I don't even know if I'm ready for the hype that they expect from me yet. I'm still young. And I did play on the still young for a while, and that's gonna come back too. It was like, sometimes I was losing, well, I didn't lose. Sometimes I, losing or wasn't winning, but I was still running well. I was still 44 mid, 44.6, 44.7, like, but I wasn't winning the major ones. Top three, always in right up in the top three. But then it was other people were saying, I'm 18 years old when I turned pro. You're still young. I took that like, but I'm in this. You know what I mean? I signed up for this. I'm young, but I'm in this. So when I first turned pro, when I moved back home, I wasn't in the best group, I don't think. So it made it a little difficult because my coach and my agent was going back and forth, and I was in the middle of a lot of stuff. The workload wasn't hard. A little difficult because I was still trying to go to school and be pro. Still going to school and be pro, and I was tired and traveling a lot. So I'm training. I was with Steve Riddick. That's when I was with Steve Riddick. I first turned pro. I wanted to move back home and go with Dwayne. But then Nike said, hey, we can't give you all this money and you just go with your high school coach.
Yeah, that's a whole nother piece.
Yeah.
So, whole nother piece.
So I went with Riddick. And it just didn't mesh. Like, coach athlete relationship is a big thing, especially coach athlete agent.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the middle of all that, it's a lot.
See, hold on, before you even go past that. See, that's crazy. So you had a coach, and they didn't want to pay that coach. They wanted to go with a whole nother coach.
Yeah.
Crazy. And people understand that happens, even to someone at your level. But, it's a company that's like, no, we don't want you to go to your coach. We're saying they don't know anything about coaching. They know nothing about coaching. Nothing. They're just like, hey, do we advise you with this guy? We pay this guy. We keep paying that guy. So go with that guy.
Yeah, it happens.
In a sport where coach athlete relationship is probably
big,
most important.
Yeah. Huge.
It is a individual sport where you gotta trust, you gotta think the average human being never runs full speed. Right? Like the
average ever. Human,
they don't ever run full speed. And you asking a track and field athlete to do this day in and day out. They gotta trust the person who is giving them these instructions to go against human nature. Right. And then Nike's just like, but we want this guy.
Yeah,
man. You know, see, we have to have you on here again because there are different things that I want to talk about. You know, I know that a big topic of discussion now currently is on entrepreneurship and people kind of not going through the middleman and doing their own thing because, you know, things are shifting in that direction where you can kind of do things yourself. And I just wish there was a way for in track and field for the athletes to have a little more something. Right. I don't know what it is.
LaShawn OG in the game now, though. He do what he want now.
Yeah. He can do what he wants now. But you know.
LaShawn the LeBron James of USATF. That boy.
Track isn't forgiving, though. You know, Sean's look. I mean, thankfully, Sean's been running fast consistently. You know, I've talked to folks those off years where you have a bad year where you're dropping 40.
Yeah, get you.
They won't show you no love.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I'm gonna tell you when it got serious. It got serious when 2007. I turned pro in 2005. World championship. I went to a world championship. I think I was on a relay. 2006, I think I won World Cup. The top people didn't really, the top guy or top two, and I won whatever. But 2007, world championship, I got second in the 400. That's the first time I ran 43 seconds.
Who won that one?
Jeremy won.
Okay, that was Jeremy. Okay.
It was Jeremy, me, and Angelo. He went 43-40-something. I went 43.9. The Angelo went 44.1 or something like that. First time I went 43, though, and I was like, ooh. I said, okay. I think I said this in an interview. I told somebody. I said, yo, next year, I'm going to win that gold.
Yeah, yes, sir.
I said
that must be crazy running 43 and losing.
Yeah, I did that a couple times.
Yeah.
And then that year between that 2007 and 2008 year, man, and I won 2008. But leading up to 2008 was a year where Dwayne was so locked in. I was locked in. Our goal was to beat Jeremy. It wasn't to run a certain time. So we actually
beat Jeremy.
We studied. He was the guy who was out. You got to beat this guy. And we studied.
I feel like you told me something similar to this, but this is how you got to Jeremy in the first place. You picked people off, right?
Yeah, it was. Hey, you had Chris Brown, Kakai.
Chris Brown was a problem because he was consistent.
You had a guy from Canada, Taylor. I can't forget it. It was like
every year you were picking folks off.
Yeah, it was like I had to beat this person, then I had to beat this. But then after I was winning, I was getting, not only was I beating people, I was getting closer to Jeremy.
Okay.
It's like I was getting closer.
It sounds like boxing, man.
I know it's
like. Wait, hold on. I need it because the Jeremy thing is really cool. Like, he built up, and then what happened when he beat Jeremy, and then afterwards, right? So you were picking people off. There was Kakai. Tell me about that, how you were targeting folks, and how you took Jeremy down.
So it was really Dwayne. Dwayne studied it so much, man, to the point where I would be overseas and I would run a race. He would film me, which he did ever since high school. He would film me in the race. So I'm looking at me right after the race. He ain't even focused on the whole race. He's just looking at me. As soon as I come off the track, I tell him what I felt. I've always been able to tell you what went on right afterwards, or just kind of play it back, because I'm not out there blind. I've always been a type of athlete who just, okay, you can tell he's thinking through this and he's working it out. So the combination of coming off the track, seeing myself just run something, and then be able to tell him what's going on, what I felt looking at it, tell him what I see, all this type of stuff. Then we go home and study it, go to the hotel room, look at it, break it down. Man, he was finged out. That's how I got an eye for, that's probably how y'all got the eye too.
Learn it, man. Yeah, you pick it up.
Serious. And then once I beat the top guy in 2008, and then I won Olympic trials, then won Olympics, it was, okay, now you know what it takes to not only run these times, but to the type of dedication and the type of focus and the type of like tunnel vision that it takes to get to this point. It's not about just being talented or just showing up. It was a lot that was put in of if I'm a car or this is all I got to work with, I need to know how to work each part. And I mean, we took it crazy. People don't break it down as much as we do, but it
was, I know what you mean.
Yeah, knowing how to move each part and what to do and training it. And I feel like people can run fast, but you can get trained to run something like from angles and knowing how to handle things, how to put yourself in the right body position and train these things and run some fast times, man. I think it's not about, it is about having the talent and everything, but being coached, being properly coached is huge. I see it. I only been through I'm on my fourth coach year now, but the different coaches that I've been through, different philosophies and everything, everybody's different, but I had a serious foundation of coaching. So I was able to be in these different programs and still buy into the program. But then when it's time to, but I still had a foundation of, I know what the basics. And sometimes when you get to these elite programs, they get so far from the basics.
Mm. Oh, man. Yeah. It starts being snake oil.
That's
you know?
A bar. That's a bar right there. That's a, you're going to have to make that a snippet in its own little video.
Oh, I don't know if a lot of people caught that. I'm going to have to reiterate what he said. Man. Like, man. A lot of these elite folks are selling snake oil. You know, come to me and you'll win a goal. Guaranteed to win a goal. Nobody can say that if they don't know you. Like, they don't sit there and get to know you and run a 150, see you run a 150, see you run a 300, how you respond to rest, how you respond to loads. Like, it takes a while to really understand all these different things that affect them.
How you respond to cues, right?
Yeah, cues.
My parent asked me one time, said, look at my daughter's video, what does she need to work on? I'm like, I don't know the girl. I can't tell you. I can tell you the girl got backside and her coach and told her that 100 times. Maybe I don't, there's nothing that I can do with an athlete and said I know who they are as a person.
Absolutely. I feel it.
So what was the approach? You know, Jeremy was the top dog at the time. Right? Mm-hmm. And throughout the course of the season, you know, how did that go? Whichever season it was that you dethroned him.
I feel like I don't wanna throw off your vibe, but I feel like you told me a story about how every time you lost, you were learning.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
I need you to break that down for some people, man. I need you to break that down for some people.
And the loss is, that's why what I said earlier, it was like, I'm gonna say I lost, but I just didn't win. So it was so it was, everything's learning, man. I knew where I wanted to be. I knew where I was, and it was work that needed to be done. It was never, I thought I was something, so I was prepared, and each race was different. But after each race, it was studying. It's always been studying after each race, to the point now, even if I had a race tomorrow, I guess, like, I'll know the last thing each person in the race ran. I'll kind of go back and look at film and see, this may be too much. This may be the reason why I haven't cracked a crazy time yet, because I'm too into stuff. And maybe thinking too much has slowed me down where I need to think less and open up.
I was going to ask you that.
You know what I'm saying? So, but I can know when they start to fade, and it may not happen, but I get prepared. And they say proper preparation prevents piss poor performance.
Okay.
So being properly prepared, and it's just always been my thing. But it's always lessons. Like you said, I mean, it's just the Wayne was so locked in, I didn't have to do a lot, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. And people really hear about the coach, so that's good that you give it.
He did, man. He came to me with film. I had to play my part to be coachable. I had to want to be coached. I had to want to be the best. I had to believe that I could be the best. I knew that it would take work. I knew every race, if it didn't go right, okay, we went. I knew if it didn't go or we didn't win, we went back to the drawing board. And if I did win, we went back to the drawing board. So everything was work. And everything was, like JB said, everything was a lesson till it got to the point where I was the man. And then it got more intense because it was, okay, now I have to stay here. I didn't feel the pressure, though. Okay. I didn't feel the pressure. Like, my mom is always, oh, go have fun. Go have fun. I really didn't feel the pressure of it. Because I isolated myself a lot. I just did stuff different. I moved away from home at some point and went down to Florida just to kind of
less distractions.
Yeah, so I took it for, I'm gonna tell you why I may have taken it that way. And things happen in people's lives when they started to take things different ways. My brother passed away, never got a chance to see me run track. That's in 99, before I started to run track. And when I was younger, baseball, football, he was the one at these events. Man, that's my brother. You get a home run, I give you $5. He doing this whole thing. So for me to become an athlete for Nike, a professional athlete, and have an opportunity to actually make something of myself, and he never really got a chance to. He passed away his freshman year in college. Sports, musician, whole nine. So to have someone who never got a chance to fulfill anything, now I have this opportunity. I got to get this all I got. And I've been riding it ever since.
Yes, sir. Wow, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, man, I've been riding it, man.
So. I remember man, I'm going to keep going back to this Jeremy thing until you talk about it some more, because I remember the hype, okay? You're not going to downplay this because everyone, listen, no one talks about Jeremy Warner anymore. That is true. But he was the hype. He was like, oh, man, he's going to be the best ever. He's going to run 42.
and let's call it what it was. And he was white. And so it just,
I mean, that is, that's, that's, yeah. I mean, that's, it was real, like, it was like, he's the best.
Michael got Johnson, white boy with swag.
Running, he was getting the contracts. He was getting everything. You know, he had shades on. He come out with the, and he was winning. He was winning comfortably, easily. Yep. And you took him down. And after you beat him, he was, whatever you did, post-traumatic, like, after you beat him, started pulling out of every race that you, like, oh yeah, Sean's supposed to race Jeremy in Italy, and I'm like, oh man, it's gonna be a good race. Jeremy pulls out the last, oh, they're supposed to race in Zurich, he pulls out. I'm like, what's going on? And then when he finally had to race you, he didn't know what to do. He's like, okay, I'm gonna get out fast because Sean was 19. He got out, got fried, he ran him down. I'm gonna get out comfortably because, you know, I'm strong. He got a comfortably, ran by him, and then he like just gave up. I was like, what did you do to this? It's like, once you beat him one time, because it was like his confidence was at the highest level, but it was also so very fragile. Yes. As soon as he lost, he's like, I am the man, but as soon as he lost, man, tell me about that race.
Forget you know what, I don't know what that whole deal was about. I know from the outside looking in, it looked like, okay, he was dominant, he dominated, then I won, and then it just didn't. I don't know that now. Now I will say, I don't know if what was going on personally. I don't know if he. I don't know. I don't really know if he was hurt or whatever the case.
He got knocked out by Mike Tyson. And every time he stepped in the ring, he was.
But I will say, in sports, and in this sport, I've seen athletes. I'm gonna go back to the race too, but I will say I've seen athletes get confidence and get a chip on their shoulder, and it actually does something. It gives you this extra like confidence, and it's like in fight or flight modes. You know how to do something, or just having the confidence to just floor it a little bit more, or whatever the case, or just knowing you beat somebody before.
It's taste it. Once you get that taste in your mouth in this sport, man, this is a sharp sport. Once you taste blood in this sport, man, you got to keep going. Yeah.
So you were an expert. So you broke down the race. You knew how to run. For those of us who at the time, because I know so much more now than I did when I actually competed, I ran off of that. The chip on my shoulder, you know. You can definitely pull out a performance off of some. It may not be consistent, but you might be able to pull something out.
Yeah. And sometimes ignorance is bliss. Sometimes you're so ignorant that you don't even think you're going to get tired. You don't even pace over here and you floor. You actually don't even get tired. Just like, so it happens, man. But Olympic race, I think my first time beating him and getting a taste of beating who was actually on the throne was in Germany or somewhere the year of 2008. And I can remember the feeling because it was so strategic. It was so planned out what I was doing. And I just hit my cues. It was like, okay, all right. And I said, oh, okay, that's it, okay. And I started winning after that. I won trials, and then Olympics came up. He had won the last Olympics, and I was confident. I won trials. I had already beat him that year. He was really us two was like the only two who were dominating at that time, just going back and forth to the point where I remember this was that like Golden League era where if one person won all the series, you won $1 million. So it was going back and forth to the point like, bro, just win it. We're at them.
I'll give you $250, bro.
Come on, man. We just get this million, bro. Please.
We get no bread if we get out of it like this, man.
Let's like, bro. We get this million. Come on.
Right. I'm going to tell you what else used to happen between us. We used to... Because his agent was Michael Johnson, or it was his protege, and he was coached under Clyde Hart, who also coached Mike.
And it was that whole thing.
It was they had a deal, and we used to go back and forth with lanes, like three, who would go in four. Oh. Technical meetings would get ugly, man.
Oh, so this is the high level politics, folks. Listen to me. So this is what happens behind the scenes. Do you hear what Sean is saying? That at the highest levels, it's a battle for lanes. Like, yo, I get lane four. No, I get four. I get five. No, you're going to be out of five. I'm going to be out. Yeah, and it's ugly.
Yeah, last race, I saw how you rolled me in three. And I like, yo, I get four. Like, so, but I've been through battles, man. I battled him starting through major. Then I had a Karani era. What's happening? And now it was Van Niekerk. But I kind of got hurt before that. Now it's kind of open. Nobody's really the man in the event. That's actually some people running fast, but not showing up. And
No one's like the guy. Yeah, that's some fact. And I remember talking to you right after you ran. We were in Rio, and you were talking a little bit about that race with you, Karani,
and Van Niekerk.
And you were like, man, he got going.
Man. Well, that's a world record run. That's a world record run right there.
Yeah, because
both of you got you and Karani ran fast.
Man, I think I came through 200 at like 20.5 or something.
Yeah, you know it's
rolling, man. I will say, I could have been I mean, we always say we could have been better prepared, but I hit some times on that. So that was a race. When he got out, he just went. He just kept going. It was
kept going.
I've never seen anything like that.
I mean, he was like 20-50 through the two.
Yeah, he just
kept I never going. Seen anyone do that and keep going
in lane eight,
like 31 flat or something crazy through the three, and it's still going.
But I will say, I feel like he trained for that. He was well trained from a anaerobic and aerobic standpoint.
Have to be.
I feel like he was out in lane eight, kind of fearless, but still calculated and knew what he was doing. I feel you could see him coming home on the home stretch that he was controlled just because of his breathing pattern. You can look at his breathing pattern and see that he had been through maybe not those waters of that type of lactate, but he's been through something and knew how to handle. He knew how to handle it. It was like a certain rhythm to it, and he was able to handle that rhythm. How he trained for it is however they trained for it. But I think as far as being prepared, watching that race, I think he was prepared.
I mean, to come through that fast and to hold on, that's some serious, you know.
Yeah, because I came through that fast. I came through at 20:50 also, but didn't do a lot of over distance stuff. I did a lot of sprint stuff that year, not a lot of over distance.
You kept it under 300?
That's when I was with Brooks. I think we may be a 450, but slow. It was like a jog, the curve, just kind of
tempo.
Yeah, so, but I knew that year he was doing 500, 550. 600.
Oh, say that again. Yeah. He's doing what? 500s?
500, 600s on grass, hitting it, which everyone's different.
Mm-hmm.
He maybe 100 and something soaking wet. I got all this muscle on me. So
yeah, you're not a 500 runner.
Yeah, so I knew how to get there different. But it's all looking at that, and I could tell that. He was prepared. I didn't think he was going to keep running like that.
That was amazing. That was a crazy race.
That was crazy, man.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I was looking at the jumbo trying while I was
going. No. I'm not going to lie. I talked to you right after, and I remember you. I remember you were like.
Yeah, that could get up with that. That was crazy.
But he's like, both you and karate were like, man, this guy.
But let me tell you what I think about when I think about that time. I do think the times are possible. When the breakdown times and I think about certain type of training it'll take and a certain type of discipline and being able to relax and an athlete and athlete able to handle certain workload. Not even workload, but understanding what they're doing enough. Now, the difference between the two of the people tell me all the time, man, you can run a lot faster than you run. I feel the two of us are different is I've been running so long and I think so much. Like I was saying earlier, at some point, well, I feel like with me, I need to think less and open up more and I may get faster times. I don't act sometimes. I know what people are doing. I'm looking.
You're too calculated. Yeah.
But this has came about. This may have been a reason why I've had 15 years in pain.
Right.
Because I ran a race smart, knowing that, okay, I don't have to kill this race. I ain't going to get paid that much more money. I just need to win and go to the next one.
Yeah.
Business. I ain't trying. You had some people who blasted them out, only lasted a couple years in the sport because they drove hard every race.
A lot of folks, man. You have the longevity, man. There are folks who, you know, it's and that's such a valid point. I'm glad you said that because, you know, as coaches, man, we're trying to teach, you know. We're like, hey, look, you know, yeah, it it's not always about just running a fast time.
Right.
Running a fast time is actually not that hard. Like, it's not hard to get someone fast to run a fast time, but running fast at the right time, having a career that's relatively injury free, or having longevity, those are two very different things, man. And those take some time and some plans, and actually some patience as well. You know, I see a lot of folks who pop up when you're 19-8. You don't know their name. They were 19-8. Maybe get to the Olympic final or something, and you never see them again.
Never hear from them again.
Yeah.
On your career, and you see that a lot. Folks running ridiculously fast times, and they disappear. So it's not just about running fast, coach. You know, longevity is something to think about. Sean, how many years? 15 years in the game?
20 years. Right. Actually, running fast requires less work out of you.
Thank you. Exactly. Say that again, Sean. Let's have LaShawn say that. What was that?
It requires you to do less. Like, running fast requires less work while going through the motion of running. And you just... more you trying to run fast, the most of the time, the slower you going to run.
Yeah.
And tell me this, though. So when you look at your longevity, I mean, one of them was, to me, it just sounded like track IQ, right? Like, you had an understanding for the sport. You had a really good awareness of body and awareness of self. What other things would you attribute to your longevity, though? Because, I mean, this like, you pushing in on Vince Carter type numbers now, right? you've been in the game for a minute.
Like I said, family. I've had a support system that has told me, "Hey, handle what you need to handle with that," and we will handle back home. Whether it be from, like I said, my parents or my cousin handling foundation stuff back home, community backing me on stuff that I can focus. That's been big. Isolating having the ability and being able to isolate myself, I will say that has contributed to, because my routine would be, I was just tracking home for years. It was just tracking home. I didn't really want to do much. And that kind of made it so that I did a lot of extra stuff. Extra stretching, extra hydration, extra push-ups, extra, because it's just I'm there. And I never knew what somebody else was doing. It's like, yo, they might be training, man. Not that I was that, not that I was that, like, thinged out, but I wanted to be good at it. Longevity. Definitely the awareness of the body and taking care of my body. You can ask anybody who's been on a team with me or has roomed with me, then know that I'm in the training room. I'm always in the training room, or I'm sleeping. Yeah. I'm in the room. Sean, I'm always in the training room. Because I understand it. And I actually had Dr. Pascal, from when I was young, quantum neurology, who kind of taught me about the importance of not only the massage and the chiropractor, but the nervous system. High level training nervous system is important. You can fry your nervous system and just run slow.
Yes.
Not know what's going on. So the nervous system it became a huge thing for me, and understanding that. And just taking care of my body, man. I take care of my body a lot. Any doctor I've worked with, therapist, will say, man, he really has a good awareness of his body. But I did that and know that because of knowing that this is what I'm using to run. So I need to kind of know what's going on.
Another piece I wanted to ask you about, because as far as track and field being a sport that most folks don't make a lot of money, you've actually been successful in track and made some good money as a career. And, you know, you don't see that often, especially in track, but also you haven't, you know, a lot of folks, they make money and then they run into a lot of financial situations because they don't have financial literacy. And so how did you, from my understanding, you know, you've managed your assets well, you're doing well, starting businesses and doing other things on the side that I'd like to hear about, obviously. You know, how was that for you? So, you know, coming up in Portsmouth, and then when you started getting these big Nike contracts and winning appearance fees and the money started coming in, how did that impact you, and how did you pivot so that it wasn't a distraction and you were still able to stay on task and still have this career?
I was blessed. My mom ended up telling me that, boy, you need to at least pay your cell phone bill. My mom handled stuff, man. She handled my bills.
Oh, so you're lucky. Oh, man.
One of them ones.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
We're going to do a show on moms. The moms are on it. Okay?
We need to have mom on the show.
Man, seriously.
About my mom. Oh, man, that question. I don't know how that question would have went. Like, my mom actually, I remember her giving my accountant during tax time, things highlighted already that he needed to throw a different color and everything. I had a female agent. I'm going to just say this. I had an organized mom, and I had an agent who was a female who was also detailed and organized. Who didn't kind of let me run crazy financially, and the fact that I isolated a lot of years, I didn't require me to do much. I could have gotten some bad investments. I did invest some early and lost some money, made some money, and just had some extra money. But I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do this forever, because it was one of those deals it's not a thing I can do till I'm 50 years old. So I have to put some money away. When I first got into the game, I had Sean Crawford, who was older, who was also working with my agent. I had Angelo Taylor, who was older. I had Terrence Tramiel.
They all had successful careers, yeah.
Art Williams. So I learned from a lot of these guys, and I asked questions. So a lot of things now, I call these guys now because we traveled together. We were in the sport, but we had the same agent. And I asked a lot of questions about finances and what not to do and what did they do or what was to come based on how careers go. But my mom held that down. she did. I ain't gonna lie. She made sure that was cool. Now it's a thing where, towards the end of the career, I got my foundation. I'm actually home right now doing some things and trying to get my foundation going, because it's programs and things needed in the city that requires resources, that through my foundation, I feel like we can make a positive change. And we already have, with some funds that I've given myself.
Yeah.
Just came out because they're just my people wanting to see and give hope. So I got a foundation going. I own trucks a little while ago in my area right here in Portsmouth. The port is right here. So it's a thing where a lot of people in the area when I was growing up who was older say, hey, man, you got some extra money. Trucks, freight wouldn't be a bad deal because they drop it off right here in your city. So I ended up meeting some guys who were older back in the day and invested in some trucks. So
I heard about that before.
I had 5 tractor trailers at one time. I got into some real estate stuff and remodeling houses. I'm going to tell you what I actually did. Then I was younger and I had people who were getting older and getting higher up in whatever they were doing or close to me. My aunt became a really successful real estate agent. That's how I got into just doing with that. People knowing about the trucks, and I want to diversify different things and not put too much. And I ended up just getting the ball rolling on a lot of different things so that now, with having extra time, I'm just involving myself more in these things so that when it's sport over, the financial part of it. Now, I won't say I'm just this financial, like I'm financially literate to the point where I know everything, but I do ask a lot of questions. And I have these resources and I ask people questions. I know accountants. I know these people. I know these people. So I make sure I know my business, but my mom know all of it. So,
yeah.
So, and it's still like that. So eventually I'm going to have to maybe know more or pass it on to a wife at some point. But right now, while I'm still focused, she's like, hey, I got you. So that's good.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Was she also a part of just, I mean, we talk about your financial literacy, but I mean, just you from Portsmouth, you became famous, and you got a key to your city, don't you?
Yeah, I got a couple.
They had the key to the city, you know, casually.
A couple years ago, they gave me a week, the LaShawn Merritt week in Portsmouth.
I mean, people don't just get that, but I mean, how in addition to financial literacy, man, how were you able to just stay out of trouble? Like, again, coming from the hood, making it, right? We can say that you made it, let's be honest. And, you know, we've seen a lot of, whether any type of athletes, but especially track and field, because I trained with LaShawn Merritt and I trained with Xavier Carter. You know what I mean? Those are two different stories. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. What were some of the things that also kept you on this right path where you don't hear a lot of, negative publicity. You don't hear.
I'm gonna just go ahead and say, Mom. We'll let him answer.
My mom worked. Okay, and it's gonna be big too. So when I was in elementary school, my mom worked at my elementary school. When in middle school, she didn't work at the middle school. But then when to high school, my senior year, she worked at the high school.
Oh yeah. So
as far as getting in trouble, it just. But I will say there was some people who. Just because your mom worked at the school don't mean you go get in trouble. So it had to have been something. I think my thing was when I was younger, I always was good without really trying. So it was like, I was cool. Because it was like, I'm good at this, but it won't like, I was trying. And if I was really, really trying, some of the people was trying, acting like they was the man. People didn't really. I was just going with it. And I never cared about being cool.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that can kind of, people can put more weight on cool and kind of not handle their business.
Good point.
Cool. Like, so that drew a whole different crowd that wasn't even just about being bad. They just wanted to be cool.
Yeah.
It just was so many different crowds, and I just always had people who kind of told me, man, you can kind of, you good. You, not really that I'm good, but kind of looked at me to kind of, I don't know, bring out the best in whatever. I don't really know. Like, but I didn't really ever feel the weight of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just was, I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's good that you say that, because I think a lot of times it's perceived that when someone's doing well, everyone's going to tear them down. But it's not always the case. Sometimes people like to see someone doing well because it's inspirational, you know, coming out of somewhere, you know, come where you're coming out of.
And I let people know that. I even have to let my dad know sometime. I love my dad. I talk to my dad all the time. I know I talk about my mom, but my dad, I talk about my dad. I mean, I talk to him just as much as I talk to my mom. I talk to my mom because he handles logistics, but I talk to my dad probably three times a week.
Okay.
We talk about everything, and that's my guy.
But I not to lie, your thoughts. I like the point that you made about you know, you weren't trying to be cool. And I think that's kind of connected to what we brought up before. Because, you know, there is pressure to be cool, you know, coming up.
Yeah.
I speak for coming up in Black. You know, I came up in St. Croix, which is majority Black, and then going to Teaneck High School. And there's always this pressure to kind of be cool and to not be good at school and to kind of always hang out. And you know, it's counterproductive, but that pressure is real. And it's cool, as a kid, you have something you're good at and you're proud of it. and you're not ashamed to be good at that thing. And that thing gets looked at, you know, because you're good at it, you take pride of it, and you're, you know, you're cool. Like, people are like, oh, man, just he's the best at this. So he's the best, you know, and so you don't necessarily suffer all those negative, you know, all the bullying and things like that. So you know, you have to try to be cool because you're better. You just, you know.
Yeah, I'm saying I had to tell my dad sometimes, and then he'll say, this is what I was trying to get at. He'll be like, man, I don't know what it'd be if I had that speed. I don't know what it I'd do if I was given that. He say that.
Oh, yeah. Nah. Given.
You got to correct him.
Bro.
Given, yeah.
I'd be like, Pops, I'd be out here working, bro.
Now, hold on. Let me jump in, because we train with LaShawn, so I'm going to say LaShawn. Given his speed, okay, but I will say there's
I'm waiting
a fine line between hard work and talent, okay? So LaShawn, no matter how hard he works, this guy has something that I call talent, okay? Because Byron and myself, we're not too shabby, and we train with this guy, and what I can tell you is it is a humbling experience. When you're running as fast as you can, as hard as you can, all the time, and this guy here is just, I mean, he's just not gonna. I remember, I always tell the story. It was one of the first, like, my first year coming to train with you guys, right? So I just got back from the World Championships in the 60, right? In the semifinals. So I'm like, you know, I'm kind of quick. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm 60. And LaShawn, from what I know, is a 400 runner. So I'm like, hey, man, look, 400 guy. Whatever, we're gonna do block stars today, you know. So we have block stars, and LaShawn, you know, I forgot my spikes at home. So LaShawn forgets his spikes at home. He has Pegasus on or something. Now I'm all out, shirt off, short tights, you know, monster fly spikes. I'm like, man, we're doing like 10s, 20s, and 30s. Now I'm like 5'8, Sean's like 6. What are you? How tall are you?
Three.
You're 6'3, Sean's 6'3, he's a 400. Sean, my fools beat me for 10 meters, man. At this point, I'm pretty good in the 60. You know, I'm like All-American, we'll come off the World Championship. And I'm like, this 400 running sneakers is not going to beat me. Listen, 10s, 20s, and 30. I didn't beat him in one. It was the worst practice. I was so mad. 10 meters!
Yeah. I got a coach question. So I asked a coach this one time, because I can do stuff and I can adapt quick. I can do stuff, and coach people are kind of, like you just said, look at me and be like,
Flint.
It ain't, it's like, it's normal to me, but then it's whatever. So I asked the coach one time, I'm like, yo, how am I able to do things that other people may struggle to do? Or how come I can kind of, we can do a same training time, but then I can get into a competition, then I can execute a lot better. And it was just like, if it was this it thing, it's like, bro, you got it. At some point, you just got to accept, like, it's something that you got it. But then she said, you got talent. Like, just because you can run fast doesn't mean, like, talent has this, does talent have this whole, it's a lot wrapped into talent? Like, what's the difference between, like you said, somebody really working hard and somebody having talent? What's the talent? Does the talent push you over?
So, you want to go, Coach Byron?
Nah, you start it off. I'm going to anchor this one.
I was going to say, you could look at it like, if you want to use another terminology, we could say athleticism, right? Like your level of athleticism. So instead of putting you in a category, like you're a 400 runner or you're this or that, you have a certain level of athleticism, like your athletic talent is high, right? So it's like, you could have done a lot of different things. Like, you ran the 400, but with your, like, to run 43, you have a certain level of anaerobic capacity. Like, train that. I can put myself in that state all day long, lactic zone. I could train the lactic zone all day, every day, for the rest of my life. I'm not gonna necessarily be able to tolerate it or be able to reach the same top speed as you or maintain it even close. No matter what I do, no matter what kind of training, no matter what supplements I take, like, I'm not going to be able to overcome the gap in our natural talent. And we've done workouts with you. We've done workouts where the workout was to run 150s, you know. And the times are 17, 16, 15. Now, three of us can do that, and we could do that at about the same capacity, and we look the same. But then on the last one, when you decide to run 14, between Coach Byron and myself turn sideways and run through us and then leave us 15 meters back, understand that we are doing the same workouts as you. And we're working hard at that point, but there's nothing we're going to do to make up that 15-meter gap that you just put on us. And that's just your level of athleticism, your talent, your genetics. That's something that you have. That's the thing that can't be overcome. So I do think everyone has a certain potential. And can you improve? Sure. You could get closer to your cap. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you know, we're not all the same.
And I'm going to say this. I felt like me and Durant were talented, right? Like, when you look at the percentage of, right, the level we ran on, NCAA at that point, making it to NCAAs, we were traveling, we were running international track meets. So in my mind, I am a talented track and field athlete. But I think, you know, LeSean was the first person I ever ran against in a training session where, you know, we brought up the word cool earlier, but we, you know, as track athletes, you know, you're trying to, especially quarter mile, you're trying to be cool doing a workout. So you're trying to exert the least amount of energy as possible. Right. So I remember like my first week, we was running tempo with Sean and everybody cool, man. Everybody trying to be as chill as possible. And like you said, on the last one, LeSean just tried to hit it. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to hit it too. So I hit it. He hit it. He just had like three or four gears that I just
exactly
ever, like, God just ain't put that in my bag. And the thing is, like, when I hit the first three or four with him, like, and I'm you know, Sean, but I'm like, man, I can roll with this dude, no sir. And so when I think about that, though, you know, I take it a step further than talent. You see, talent is a thing, and I feel like me and Adrian were talented. Mm-hmm. But there's two sets of three letters that I think differentiate talent. The first one is DNA. Right? Yeah. Some people just got more in their bag. And the second one is CNS, right? Some people just wire different in their central nervous system. So
that's me.
If you come down to it, yeah, we can hit the same time as you in training. Yeah, I might be able to there was a time when I could power clean more than Sean. Mm-hmm. Right? I could do more pull-ups.
Yeah, exactly.
By 30 meters. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. There's some things that I feel as though DNA makes a difference, and CNS makes a difference. Now, what I like about LeSean, especially tonight, you unpacking some things that I know a lot of people didn't know about you. Your study habits, your attention to detail, your preparation. I think a lot of times, especially in our sport, people are like, oh, he just running fast. Mm-hmm. Oh, Boat just running. Oh, Allison just running. Sean just running. They win because they got talent or they have a gift, right? Because I think you got a gift. I'm talented, bro. You got a gift, right? So people will blame or attribute your success to your gift and not understanding some of those things that you were doing in the background. You just talked about watching film right off the track and then studying it over and over again. Your ability to communicate with your coach. Right. You said, every time you step on the track, I can tell you where I was, how I felt, this way, where I started fading. So that's the difference, I think, when you go to the professional level, there's a different understanding about it. But with central nervous system, with DNA, with gifts and talents, I wanted you to tell me, though, you told me the study side, you told me the scientific side, the preparation side, but talk to me about that dog. Like, did you feel like when I stepped on the track, man, I'm prepared, I done trained, I got a good coach, but at the end of the day, bro, I'm from Portsmouth. Like, give me the other side that people might not really have cracked yet.
So it was three or four different coaches, and I ran the exact same times with three different training methods. And parents weren't athletes. My mom wasn't an athlete. My dad was an athlete. The one was athletes. But I said this the other day. It was something where growing up, it was knowing how to survive, not that I lived in survivor mode, just knew how to survive. And then when I got to a point where it was a world stage, it would be like, you know what? I'm from Portsmouth.
Yes.
And I'm here now. Like,
they don't let you in.
No, I'm here. So if I'm here, I might as well handle this. I might as like, why be all the way here and not belong here? I'm here because I belong here. Now, if I belong here, let's just show up and handle business. I didn't always feel prepared because different coaches, I felt, let me say this. Sometimes I didn't feel prepared, but I've always felt like I was going into something that I worked hard and I understood some part of what was going on. Now, I could have gotten to a major competition and felt like, man, I felt like I ain't doing enough of this or enough of that, and couldn't really communicate that with my coach because I was just buying into the program at that point. But as far as working hard and having the ability to work hard, but also work in detail while I'm working, made me still overcome, not just being in something and not knowing what I was doing. Even if I didn't agree on what was going on as far as 300 or training at the time or whatever, I still took something out of the sessions that was more than what the coach gave me, because I already had a foundation of kind of what I knew had to happen. So the different coaches kind of forced me to, whenever you show up, you always gonna work hard, even if you don't feel like you prepared, you here. So being that you here, you gotta throw down. That was just it. You here. Yeah, it's 8 lanes. They gave you a lane. So you all the way around the world. You could have stayed home if you're gonna get here and act scared.
I like that point, man, because a lot of athletes step to the line and make excuses. But your point is, hey, look, I may not have had the perfect preparation. I worked hard at whatever I did, and I'm on the line ready to race now, so I'm a race.
Absolutely.
Coach didn't give me 150s or 250s.
Right.
Yeah. Man, you worked hard. You're on the line. What are you going to do? Make it. Yeah. You got to race.
Right.
You got to race.
Absolutely,
I like that.
Man.
Excellent points, man. Excellent points. I don't want to keep you on here too long, man. But I definitely appreciate all the information, the background, man. You know,
you got the
story. It's unique. You know,
we get up here again. I got so much. Man, from having surgery on my toe a couple years ago and kind of being MIA a little bit to thinking about retiring to the whole COVID thing. So,
oh man, we got to get you back on here, man.
We can do a part two.
For sure. Yeah. It's hard to unpack everything in an hour or so, but we don't want to make it too long. But now I'll get you back on here because definitely a lot to chat about, you know.
All right. I still got some more training stories too with this man, Sean.
Exactly.
I'm embarrassing training stories. I thought I was the man. I thought I was the man when I moved to Virginia. I'm like, yo.
You can finish up on one.
Listen, I was coming from Brooks. So I'm like, yo, Brooks done got me. Whoop, 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 whoop. I'm just, I'm moving back closer to the family. So now I'm 3.5 hours away. It was one of those similar ones with you where I remember being at practice and I had my little thing, this was like a personal thing for me. Like if we doing like some tempo or a little longer running, like each rep, I would take a shirt off or sweatpants off. And I'm watching Sean just running in a sweatsuit, bro. The whole
thing is just ridiculous.
So I'm down. Now I'm down to white beater, like the little shorts. And I'm like, Sean still got on his daggone Wilson top, like his high school. Woodrow Wilson sweatsuit. I'm like, come on, bro. And he dogging me too. So I'm probably the reason I got into coaching, man. I figured, yo, this is what it's going to take. I need to be on the other side of the stopwatch, bro.
Cold days. I done training that cold so much already up there. I'm like, yo, I'm going to just keep this on.
Yes, sir.
From Florida.
I never trained with anyone like
doing something.
Now it definitely was because at SC, I thought I trained with monsters. You know, we had Otis there, Fortenberry, all these folks who were older than 44. So I thought I had already trained with folks that good. And I had been left before. But you know, no, you had practice with Sean.
Like, when I was trying, though, I never been left.
Yeah. No, when you were like healthy and fresh and trying. So you're like, okay, man, I'm feeling good today. Like, I'm feeling fast.
I'm gonna tell you what it is. Is I never considered myself a workhorse, training workhorse, like practice hero workhorse. But what I do have in my tool bag is speed and some lung capacity and some nervous system. So I can kind of do these longer things. And if I wanted to, well, hit a gear.
Oh yeah.
Hit it. But I know how to be relaxed to hit it, how to move, not just hit it. And I've worked on a lot of that stuff, and that stuff is having stuff in your tool bag, man. So,
that's that. Durant came from South Carolina. I came from A&T, where I was the man, bro. I won FIAC championships. So you couldn't tell, man, I was smooth, bro. So I wasn't no workhorse either. I used to just chill and practice.
Yeah.
Right? And then until I got to Virginia, and I'm like, what is this man doing? So, yeah. I learned a lot, though, man. That was great times, man. Great times.
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely learned a lot.
Definitely. I appreciate it, man. And we had some good times. We had some good times ahead of us.
For sure.
Yeah. So we're going to get you back on here, man. We're going to schedule some time, and I'd like to hear more about, you know, just what you're doing now and the foundation and different things, plans going forward, because I know that you were in training this year and you did eat a little bit before shutting things down. So I want to hear about, you know, the big Olympic plans next year and all of that. So for sure, get you back on here, man.
Definitely, man. I appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate you coming on.
Two down, man. Two up, two down, man.
Yeah, Virginia, 757. All right, LaShawn Merritt, thanks for coming.
I appreciate it.
Yes, indeed.
Take your time.